Life, culture, and current events from a biblical perspective. 2020 on Vision.
Well, as we do on a Thursday, always love to tap into the insights from Charles Newington, the National Director of Family Voice Australia. Charles is back with us once again. Hi, Charles. Welcome along.
Good morning, Neil.
Charles, the media, the public attention, it's all focused on COVID-19, the coronavirus, and with obvious good reason, it's the source of tremendous anxiety around Australia. Not only because of the health impacts, but also the financial and social impacts. Let's talk a little bit of context here about what's going on around the world. Of course, share markets have taken a real beating, haven't they? What are your thoughts and your impressions about the bigger, broader context of how these things are going on?
Yes, thank you, Neil. The phrase uncharted waters kind of rings around in my mind a lot these days because that's how it seems. And what has happened in the stock market, and people may be aware of this or they may not be, that on the stock market, one of the things that's been developing over recent years is that the stock market traders, they do their trades based upon computerized algorithms that they preset, so that these computer trades, they happen when something happens that they've decided is maybe evidence that there's going to be a fall on the market or a fall on a particular stock. So all these trades are not just people sitting there making a personal judgment anymore. They're these computerized programs that are acting in a very quick response to whatever the triggers are. And so they're dispassionate. They're not considered. They're mechanical trades. And the intention is that they would avoid market volatility and move investments to, you know, safer stocks, etc. But what that does, what they've discovered is that what this is doing is it's actually increasing the volatility of the stock market. So it's not just defending, a person's holdings from volatility. It's actually creating a volatility. And that's one of the reasons why we've seen these very huge swings backwards and forwards across the stock market, because it's machines doing it for us rather than the traders themselves directly.
Let's talk.
That's one of one of the things about big crisis is unanticipated things get thrown up, and you realize that the world's been created for fair weather, but when it runs through foul weather, all sorts of things happen.
Okay, there's lots of tensions developing around the world. We've seen oil prices plummeting, not always at our petrol pumps, but the global oil prices have been taking a dive, a big hit, but there's all sorts of factors involved in there, and coronavirus seems to have set the scene, but there's these other challenges that are going on internationally. What are your thoughts about the oil prices?
Yes, the oil-producing nations have their representative meetings every now and again, and recently they met in Vienna, and they were responding to the decline in demand caused by the coronavirus for things like aerofuel and things like that, less planes flying and that sort of stuff. So they worked together to try to keep the prices stable or whatever, or up, higher than we always complain about why the prices are as high as they are. Well, these guys sort of try to keep the prices up. And Saudi was trying to do that. They chair the OPEC group, and Russia rejected this, saying, "No, it's time to let the market set the value." And the response of Saudi was to call Russia's bluff and to slash their price of oil to China, which was Russia's most important customer. So they went into a price war with Russia directly over this big market in China. And as a result of that, the oil price dropped overnight 30% and the Dow lost 8% of its value. And so indirectly, that was kind of COVID caused. But it's one of those kind of things that, it's very hard to anticipate. And I suppose what I'm getting at here is that what is happening in the world, sometimes we feel part of our anxiety is because we're not quite sure what's going to happen. You know, we can't necessarily predict what's going to happen in our private lives any more than the stock market can predict it or the oil market can predict exactly how it's going to happen when you hit troubled waters.
Back home, Charles, of course, there's all sorts of chaos at some supermarkets, and it's not been everybody's experience, but of course there are some supermarkets and those specific products that are in high demand. Sometimes you can't get a hold of them, like hand sanitizer, and people have been battling to get a hold of some toilet rolls and things like that. That seems a little bit insignificant compared to some of the biggest things that we're talking about from around the world.
Yes.
But our government, our leaders, are concerned about controlling infection, and one of the ways they want to do that is try and keep people at work as long as they can. What are your thoughts around the context here?
Yes, this is the challenge that that government faces, is that if they lock everything down and shut everything down, then employment and income, people's private income, just stops. And if that happens, well, then the whole economy stalls, and they've got to find the balance between keeping the economy going and on the one hand, and on the other hand, trying to set in motion the kind of social distancing, for instance, that minimizes the infection levels. And one of the reasons for them keeping schools going is because of the fact that that it's such a massive industry. There's so much that's dependent upon it. So they're trying to find the kind of that fine balance point about how you don't stop an entire industry, as it were. And it's a difficult decision, something that we must be sympathetic and prayerful about, and praying for government that they'll get the balance right in these difficult decisions. And that's how it is for us too. Privately, we have these difficult decisions. How much exposure do we have? How much social interaction do we have? And how much should we not have, not just for our own health's sake, but for the health of others?
Let's talk about the Prime Minister and his comments about the COVID-19 coronavirus, a once-in-a-100-year event. He's making some references back to World War II and post-World War One. World War One, of course, yes, the Spanish flu. It was pretty significant, and we're all hopeful that it's not going to be that bad with COVID-19. What are your thoughts for the context here on just how serious this one is?
Yes, well, he didn't actually say the Spanish flu. He just said so he sort of left us to think about it, because one of the things that happened after World War One was that with a population of only 4.5 million people, 60,000 young men lost their lives in World War One, and of the 272,000 that survived the war and that came back, 170,000 of them suffered wounds and illness. And so it had a devastating impact upon the nation. That's why when you drive through towns and villages, you see these memorials, and why it's such an important thing in the whole Anzac tradition is so important to us, because there was not a family, not a town and community that wasn't affected by it. And then unwittingly and obviously without any ill intent, as the troops were coming back, they brought the Spanish flu with them. And that was 1918, and the extent of that was huge. 40% of the population fell ill as a result of it, and 15,000 died. That's, I think, what he's referring to. He's saying it completely unanticipated. It just came out of the blue. Who was expecting it? But it was a kind of an unintended consequence of the war. And these things happen. Crisis happens. And I think that for us, you know, we're lulled into a sense of security, aren't we? Into thinking that the government's got it under control and the world's relatively stable, and we don't have anything to worry about. And then something out of the blue happens, and it's such a shock to us because we're unaccustomed to crisis. You know, we live in this illusory state of stability, and that sort of decommissions our capacity to deal with crisis.
Charles, you've drawn a connection of something we don't ordinarily talk about when Anzac Day rolls around, and that is the effects of pandemic on those returning World War One soldiers. And as you mentioned, somewhere in the vicinity of 15,000 died as a result of that Spanish flu coming to Australia back in 1919. And so this coming Anzac Day, given that there won't be crowds gathering at the cenotaph, you're talking about the idea of Anzac Day services on every street corner. And this is something you're planning to do personally.
Yes, I was thinking about it personally. And then last night on the news, I heard that a son of a Vietnam vet, he just put the idea up on Facebook and sort of suggested it. And before he knew where he was, he had 60,000 people like the idea. He was just overwhelmed. And I'm one of those people. You know, I thought, you know, that Anzac Day is an important day, and we can do it with appropriate social distancing, just in small groups on our street corners or whatever. I happen to live on a street corner. I've got a very convenient kind of location, just the way that my yard is shaped. And so I'm looking forward to putting a note in my neighbour's letterboxes and meeting them at dawn.
And a little encouragement to you here, Charles, if you've got some sort of order of service that you might be able to put together and get up on your website, Family Voice Australia, no doubt there'll be a lot of takers who might be able to, you know, they might not feel confident to run a service on their street corner, but with a little support there and a little extra resource, I'm sure that there are lots of Aussies who could do that on their street corner, invite their neighbours to meet on the street corner. And because you can't meet around the cenotaph, nothing saying you can't commemorate Anzac Day. And as you say, when we talk about the Spanish flu pandemic back in the end of World War One, there is a real connection. And so we therefore be very unwise to neglect the sorts of thoughts, sentiments, gathering, commemoration that we might bring to Anzac Day. Charles, prayer initiatives. You've got a prayer initiative with Family Voice Australia. There's a huge prayer initiative that's been called by church leaders in the nation. And I wonder whether you've got some thoughts around the need for Christians at this time to be very attentive to prayer for an end to coronavirus.
I think it's important. You know, I'm using the phrase, you know, our prayer initiative, I'm using the phrase from the scripture that says, wherever two or three are gathered in my name, I'm in the midst. So using that phrase, wherever two or three are gathered, as a way of making the point that right from the very beginning of the Christian faith was very personal. It was very it was very family centered, if you like, and friendship centered, and it doesn't necessarily have to be something that takes place in a huge crowd or a gathering. And there's something wonderful about it being localized, and matching this with the Anzac Day memorial, it enables us to as neighbors, you know, to gather together and to take an approach to prayer that's what we might call more understandable and more acceptable to people who don't necessarily habitually pray, but they have got in their hearts and minds a realization that this is an important time, and if it was managed sensibly and sensitively, they'd be pleased to be a part of it. So I think that that's the dynamic of neighborhood. But before we get to the neighborhood thing on Anzac Day, I'd like to encourage us to begin to think about our extended families, and particularly the members of our families that live on their own, you know, or that are a bit more isolated. This is a great opportunity for us to just give them a call, see how they're going, stay in touch with them, and if there's anything practical we can do for them, that we see what we can do to help them in that regard. And it helps us to kind of rebuild the family prayer system, My folks, my mother was a classic. She used to pray through the whole family. You know, it was part of her family. It was part of her ritual, as it were, her daily devotional. She and my father, they would just pray through the family list. And this is a good opportunity because it just reminds us, oh, there's Uncle Bill. I'd forgotten about him. He's still on that property out such and such. That sort of thing. It just brings these people back in, and it's an opportunity once again in crisis for us to reconnect as families and to realize that blood is thicker than water, you know, and that this is our primary association, actually. It's where we derive our actual biological identity from, those people to whom we are related by blood and marriage.
Of course, as families, this is a good time to draw together, not only the nuclear family in one home, but also to keep a special eye on those who are a little more distant from us. And as you say, having some sort of ritual where you do pray for those members of the family, that's a very powerful thing that you can do. I know that all of that really is about the idea of creating or building or developing what might be a positive type of wellspring within your family. When there is a crisis that's going on, you know that people are affected at different ways emotionally, but being the leader of a family, this is an important time to be thinking about how you might create some sort of positive wellspring here, Charles.
I agree. When the weather is fine, you know, there's a tendency to get a bit sloppy, isn't there? You know, and to sort of lie on deck, as it were, and enjoy the sun. But, you know, we use that phrase shipshape to remind us that that the weather can change, circumstance can change, and life is to be lived with a kind of a readiness. And that requires a kind of a wellspring. Where is our strength coming from? And this morning's readings, I read the revised lectionary readings that many churches do, and those are my devotional readings. And one of the psalms is Psalm 23 today, interestingly enough. You know, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, because you are with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me. And there's nothing quite like finding our way back to that place of relationship with our Creator and our Savior, and letting our hearts be settled in the constancy, in the reliability, in the faithfulness of God Himself. Everything else changes, and we're being reminded by that. Everything else changes, and this crisis, I think it's a kind of a very honest moment for us, because it strips away the illusions of self-sufficiency, and ultimately life will bring us to that moment where we are no longer self-sufficient. Sooner or later we come to that moment and we realize, oh goodness, I'm reliant upon other people, and in the final analysis, I'm reliant upon God. And here, this wonderful psalm reminds us of that actually, we make all the provision we can, but in the final analysis, we are in the hands of God. And so, let's not be strangers to Him, but because, you know, He welcomes us back. He's not waiting to judge us. He's not got a whole string of things in His black book that He's going to talk to us about and give us a whipping over. You know, that's the amazing thing about the Christian message, is that in His Son, Jesus Christ, He has reconciled us. The challenge for us is to accept that reconciliation emotionally, because sometimes we don't feel that we can, but we can. This is the key thing. The reconciliation is there for us. We have a loving God that has made the peace with us, and let us draw near and let crisis create one of those lasting goods in us, which is the wellspring of our peace and the wellspring of our sense of true identity and the reason for living.
Charles, always great wise words, and the encouragement for all of us to be able to look to ways that we can appropriate that hope that we have in eternity, and to be recognized as the power to deal with the consequences, the issues and the challenges of the now. And so many Christian believers, I believe, over the coming times are going to dig deeper, and they're going to discover that their faith really has tremendous power in being able to stand against some of the anxiety and some of the issues and threats that come with the current circumstances and the climate and the proliferation of this coronavirus. Charles Newington is the National Director of Family Voice Australia, and my encouragement is visit the website familyvoice.org.au. There's also, of course, the National Prayer Initiative, and of course the coronavirus is called COVID-19, and I know that church leaders around the nation have picked up on the idea that 1900 hours is a good time, whichever time zone you are in, to take a time to pray so that the crisis of the COVID-19 coronavirus will come to an end. But visit familyvoice.org.au. Charles Newington, always great getting your insights. Thanks so much for great insights once again today on 2020.
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks for taking time to listen to this audio on demand from Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, go to vision.org.au.